Hello, it's your host Jack from the Slick Realms here to talk to you about the Beaniverse.
Hi, it's your community manager Darcy from the Slush Realm here to get your ideas out into the wild.
Hi, it's Fiona from the Dotty Realm, keeping you up to date with all the latest news in all the realms.
And today we'll be talking about all the different kinds of weapons throughout all the different Beanie Realms. We will first start with talking about the various different types of grading systems and different types of levels. Obviously, these will vary depending on what type of weapon you're talking about and where it's from, but we'll start predominantly with the swords, which have typically 5, but very exceptional blades can fall into a 6th category that we can talk about later. Now, the first category is Category 1, or Tier 1, an industrially produced weapon, which is a mass-produced weapon using some form of machinery or magic to mass produce it without any direct contact with the blacksmith or anything. These weapons are often quite weak and possess no innate magical power, as they have not been correctly forged with any sort of technique, and no matter how hard people have tried to perfect the techniques, you can't really get industrial weapons anything higher than tier 2, which is just energy inefficient compared to creating it normally. So industrial grade weapons are extremely inefficient, relatively okay blades. Obviously, you can have a weapon that's worse than a blade forged in a factory and has less, you know, power and stuff. But industrial and lower, anything below industrial probably falls into tier 0, which is just unidentified weapons that aren't really proper or anything like that. But tier 1 is pretty much the highest any actual weapon that would ever be used in combat is. And beyond that, we have tier 2, which is any military weapon. Now, industrial weapons are typically used for self-defense or things like that. As a military weapon is a weapon used by an actual soldier who is actually forged by a blacksmith. They have some unique application, some small amount of magical power that will provide a slight benefit. For example, you have a blade that's maybe twice as sharp as it normally would be, or it can set itself to like 60 degrees, for example, to make it far more hotter, more effective. But again, it's not extremely potent, it's just, you know, more effective in combat. And these blades also will have some unique design, but the thing about them, there's probably about 100 of each specific effect, so they're not that unique, because there's not that much magical compositions you can create. Obviously, we're mostly just talking about swords, but again, some other weapons can also fall into these categories. Now, the next one we're talking about is Tier 3. Now, these are Master Crafts, which means a master, you have to have someone who becomes a master. To become a master, you have to perform this. It requires around a week of consistent effort, with about an hour of leeway in there of just sleeping or doing breaks, pretty much. And they'll have pretty much be 3 of them with the same effect in the world, pretty much. So, instead of a weapon that's kind of mediocre, you'll be able to create a dazzling flame, or be so sharp it can cut through solid steel. Or maybe it can produce gales that can launch entire, you know, platoons off their feet. They're pretty effective, but they take, like, a week to produce a single one, so they're not really mass-producible. Whereas previous military ones, you can mass-produce them with a large forge with lots of people working consistently. Which is why they're still, you know, good, but not that good quality. Whereas these ones will probably be used by a general or, like, someone that is very important in combat. Now, beyond a Tier 3 or a Mastercraft, you obviously have your master weapons. Now, Mastercraft means you do this to become a master, and a master weapon means a master has crafted this, and it requires around 3 months of consistent effort with around 1 day's break. Now, the thing about these is they'll typically have a unique effect that's never replicated, but they'll have another effect that goes with that. They'll have a dual effect that is seen quite frequently. For example, increasing the speed by like tenfold for a split second, meaning you can make a very quick attack without, you know, take advantage of opportunities without really risking yourself or something like that. And they'll have a unique effect that's, you know, potentially an amplified version of similar sword types. Obviously, there's a lot more in-depth in the magical composition of this, and depending on how it's forged, obviously. But typically, it's how it goes. Now, once you've gotten to your tier 4, you have your tier 5s. And it's around only, there's around only like 20 of these. There's around 100 master weapons, around 10,000 master crafts, 30 million military weapons and around 100 million industrial produced weapons. Now, to be clear, these are only weapons in the active military, which are the ones we can count. Obviously, there's more in hidden areas or things like that, but that's just countable, which is a very small portion. We estimate around maybe 10%, excluding the tier 5s and tier 6s. We know all of those. Now, tier 5s, they're completely unique and will have a set of effects and wildly different blade composition, whereas previous blades would generally just have their quality go up consistently. Some of them will have quality go down in other areas and increase in other areas. For example, you can have a blade that's weak in, you know, physical durability as an industrial one, but can cut really hard, maybe twice as effective as a standard blade. Now, they will also have additional effects and things like that. The main thing to think about here is it's a specific composition. Now, they'll take a whole team of blacksmiths working around a year consistently, and there's very limited time, so you have to have people switching out continuously. A whole team just working on one blade. It'll take about a year of consistent effort, but obviously the assumption is that you'll have people switching out. As well as the materials, it takes about 10 years for preparation, and then 1 year. Which is why there's so little, and they have to be, everyone there has to be a master in their craft. So it might require around 100 masters working consistently for like 11 years, pretty much, to craft one sword. Which is why there's only around 20, and it's estimated that they are equal to 100 master weapons, which is why they're so powerful. Yeah, beyond that, we have, obviously, the legendary ones. There's three legendary weapons, and they were believed to be a myth. Now, the reason legendary weapons are so elusive is because you can't craft them through traditional means, and typically, again, you also need a team, and it'll take around 20 years preparation, 2 years consistent effort. But beyond the 2 years, you need one person working on it. And the reason it has to be one person is even if there's like a second break or a change in the energy being applied to it, it will disrupt it and it will just become obviously a tier 5. And they'll do this for about an estimated year pretty much without any sleep or anything, which obviously is just pretty much non-survivable, which is why they'll often die after doing this. So obviously the commitment is incredibly insane. They'll probably have to prepare for many, many years with special enchantments to keep themselves alive for that period of time. Now, once you've crafted this, it'll still probably be a tier 5, but you need to craft it to be capable of accepting large amounts of magical power from the person that wields it, because it can only become this once it takes extreme amounts of power. Now, a tier 5 is typically regarded to be semi-sentient, but a tier 6 is completely sentient and has its own mind, as well as several abilities and insane composition. Since there's only three, the conditions aren't fully aware on how to craft them, but that's just estimated for an average blade. And again, since there's only three, they're very, very rare. Two of which are owned by Meadow. One was Meadow took, and one was crafted for Meadow, and one is owned by a Dotty. But they're currently not aligned with the Dotty military. They're just sort of a wandering Dotty that wanders around the universe. Now, these are obviously blades. I think I've talked a bit about sort of blade construction beforehand, but I'll talk about some more key aspects. For example, these slakes, by bathing their weapons in magic on the outside, instead of obviously the core of the blade itself, it doesn't increase the tier as much, but it causes the blade itself improvement at a standard level to increase without increasing its enchantments. Enchantments are obviously things you can apply to a blade, which instead of obviously, a lot of the blade craft will allow the blade to store some sort of magic within itself, but an enchantment will siphon some sort of magic from the person wielding it to utilize an enchantment, which is why they're a lot more wide range instead of being stored within the blade. Now, obviously, by bathing the outside of the weapon, it won't increase its tier, it'll only increase its base efficiency, which is why slick military weapons or slick industrial weapons, not really industrial weapons because they can't really do this, because they're bathed at such high temperatures as the magic around them melt into the surface layer, causes them to have increased performance, but typically you won't see these kind of weapons as high tier. Again, you can see tier 5 and even maybe like 1 tier 6 like this. It makes them more rejecting to high level magic weapons, which is why they do not have the majority of tier 5s. But because of this, they have a very much improved performance at base level. Now, if we look at Dotties, since they don't really focus on heavy weight, and the armor is composed of lots of little individual pieces, what they'll do is they'll build a core framework, and on the outside they'll build individual scales, pretty much, to act as deflecting, meaning that they have typically blades that will redistribute the thing all around, meaning magic can very easily seep in, meaning that they typically have higher tier weapons that have a weaker base construction, making them have lots of magic properties but be relatively weak in terms of combat, which is why slick weapons are more conventionally effective and dotty weapons are more magically effective. Now, if you look at a slush weapon, typically they can use magic to form them, which makes them just very average weapons. But if you, obviously, they're going to do some proper forging, what they'll typically do is they'll freeze the weapon and perform a series of movements simultaneously while the weapon is effectively frozen in time to a degree, causing it to superheat and change instantly, causing it to have insane durability, pretty much. By folding it over and over again while it's frozen, the materials will instantly bond together, creating a sort of diamond-like bond in their structure. But this also creates an interesting effect where it appears it has sort of glowing blue veins that is the magic that is entrapped within it, flowing through the weapon at higher tiers, obviously, if you do it correctly. Which is why these weapons are so highly prized, because the techniques are extremely hard and dangerous to pull off. Obviously, a mistake can result in someone dying. And we're going to obviously focus on the dangler weapons. The dangler ones are typically created by creating intense pressure on a single point and molding a weapon. So what they'll do is they'll get extremely heavy things and they'll crush something into a mold repeatedly, and once they've had the mold, they'll hammer it out and remove small portions of it, mostly compressing the weapon over a long period of time, which is why the weapons are so sturdy and heavy, but pretty much magic rejectant, because they're designed to be incredibly sturdy. Now, obviously, if you're going to look at axes and other things, they're going to be slightly different classification system, but predominantly that's the usual magic administration and classification system administered by everyone. And that's all I have for now. On to the news anchor.
Thanks, Jack. That was very insightful. An update in all the breaking news is that it's dominated by the meteorological event that we reported on in our last update. It's coming very close and it's causing a significant impact across the entire Beanie Boo universe. There is going to be a proposed 3 month truce between all the various parties, which is very surprising, especially with the Dotties. To give you a quick update on this truce, I'm handing you back to Jack.
This is controversial, obviously, because up until now, it was believed that the Dotties were going to withhold from the truce and only reduce their numbers, because they had no real major involvement with this, but it's been recently revealed the celestial event, based on predictions, could actually be the start of a gateway of a series of celestial events. The Slushes and Danglers are currently planning on channeling all this power into creating a super weapon. We are not currently aware, but we believe it could be a sword or something of some kind. Or they could be planning on launching a major scale assault. And it's also believed on from our insiders, obviously within the slick spy network that we have, that there could be a potential massive spy operation being launched from the Slicks and predominantly, massively, from the Danglers, using their advanced Dotty spies to go invisible and intercept within the operation to see what's going on and potentially prevent it from occurring. Now, obviously, we can't tell what exactly is going to happen, and predictions can obviously be wrong, but it is highly likely that a series of extremely powerful celestial events aimed towards the Slushes could cause a major shift in the war, and the Slicks and Danglers are preparing for a massive onslaught by preparing to release the Meadows and Luvies that they've had on standby on their planets onto the other planets. Obviously, a few, maybe about 10, have been released throughout the whole experience, but they're planning on releasing the full legions along with 37 Sauron divisions to launch attacks throughout the Dotty and Slush planets. This could potentially lead to a swift end to the war if the meteorological events are not capable of turning the tide and the Slushes and Danglers are not capable of weathering the storm. It's believed that if this is to occur, the Slushes will surrender, leaving the Dotties to fight an estimated 1,000 years at their current rate, and at which point the Slicks and Dotties will retreat after dealing heavy losses on both sides. This is obviously a worst-case scenario, so the current hope is that there will be a mostly peaceful situation, and the ceasefire will lead into further diplomatic progress in this time of temporary peace. That's all for me. Now on to Darcy.
Thanks, Jack, for that additional insight. It's very a complex situation, and we'll keep you up to date in the next update. Handing over to our communication manager, Darcy.
Once again, Jack, we have no questions submitted to our email, beanieboolore@gmail.com. So, once again, I'm going to ask my own question. How do Beanie Boos get into sword forging? Is it something they decide in school when they're at birth? When do they get into it, Jack?
Well, obviously it depends. You can have a natural talent or it can be born into this. So, the predominant ways that a Beanie Boo will be born into high-level forging is based on the arts that they learn. Pretty much an art is an adaptation of the soul. It's hard to explain. Pretty much it's when the soul learns from some sort of experience, like your brain grows connections, and it will learn a more efficient way to do that. Not by adapting your body, but it'll be able to utilize magic in your body. Even if you have very little, even if you have none at all, it can create magic for that specific purpose. Pretty much it's a non-magical method of using magical attacks or magical methods, which is why it's especially important for forging. So, for example, if you train really hard and have a natural aptitude for forging, you can get lots of arts. But also, to a degree, arts as well as magical techniques can be passed down a family in which they grow in strength continuously. So, for example, if you're born into a strong family, you'll have a natural aptitude for a specific thing. Whereas, obviously, you can have a talent, but typically, if you are part of a forging family, you will have an aptitude for forging and a special technique for that forging. Obviously, if you don't do any studying, you won't be very effective at forging. But it depends. If you're part of an important family, you'll probably go into forging. If you have an aptitude for forging, you realistically go into forging. Nobody will really go into forging at birth. Does that answer your question?
Yes, Jack, that does answer my question. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. See you next time.
Bye. See you next time.
See you next time.